All right. Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday evening. Hello, Cheryl. It's good to be here. I've been away from home for nearly a week, so it's always nice to be back, especially back right here in Pal Talk. I really enjoy being right here in Pal Talk. last week, I played a couple of songs. I think I played three songs last weekend, one in each of my teachings, one Saturday, one Sunday, one Monday, from Israel. And I said that maybe this week I would bring songs written by Ramana Maharshi and written by Muru Ganar, especially since during Seven Steps, you know, we study their quotes. So I think I'm going to start right now by playing a song by Ramana Maharshi. Just to make sure you understand the words, I'm going to read the words to you. Ramana was actually very, very devotional. And I think you'll hear that devotion in these words. Ocean of nectar, full of grace, O Self Supreme, O Mount of Light, whose spreading rays engulf all things, shine as the sun which makes the heart lotus blossom fair. He whose pure mind turned inward searches whence this I arises, knows the self aright, and merges in you, Aruna Hill. He who with heart surrendered to you beholds forever you alone, sees all things as forms of you, and loves them as none other than the self, O Aruna Hill, triumphs because he's immersed in you, ocean of nectar, full of grace, O Self Supreme, O Mount of Light. So this is that song written by Ramana Maharshi.
That Loud Noise was the next song, also written by Ramana Maharshi. I think that's enough for now. So why don't we just go into a moment of stillness? Amen. All right. So, we are here to continue with the seven steps. Hello, Steve Pofaw. Look, Danielle, there's Steve Pofaw.
Hi.
She says, hi, Steve. Steve went to Israel with us, but I don't remember seeing Steve in the room before, so this was my first time remembering seeing him here. Barb is also in the room, Barb D. She was in Israel with us. And Jay's not here right now, but he's often here, so he may show up. We'll see what happens. but as I mentioned, we're here for the seven steps teaching, step two. And tonight we're going to begin with quote number 262. So what I am doing is putting in the room a link to 262 in my journal. But of course, as usual, before I read from my journal, I will read quote 262 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. This is on page 55 of that book. Quote 262 is from Sri Annamalai Swami. And this is a very long quote, so you may have to pay attention and not let your mind wander, or you'll get lost halfway through it. It's maybe 20 lines long. if anybody's listening on the radio and you want to get to my journal, you go to RDA7. That is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get there, you'll see on the menu bar above a step 1 and a step 2. Click on step 2. And then choose the numbering sequence that will let you find your way to number 262, which is where we are beginning. And let me read 262, Sri Annamalai Swami, from The Seven Steps to Awakening. Here we go. Remember, pay attention. It's long. All right, here we go. Mind and body are like the tongue and teeth in the mouth. They have to work in harmony with each other. The teeth do not fight with the tongue and bite it. Mind and body should combine in the same harmonious way. However, if we want to go beyond the body, beyond the mind, we have to understand and fully accept that all the information the senses provide is not real. Like the mirage that produces an illusory oasis in the desert, the senses create the impression that there is a real world in front of us that is being perceived by the mind. The apparent reality of the world is an illusion. It is merely a misperception. When the mind perceives a snake, where in reality there is only a rope, this is clearly a case of the senses projecting an imaginary image onto the real substratum. This, on a much larger scale, is how the unreal appearance of the world is projected by the mind and the senses onto the underlying reality of the self. Once this happens, we see the superimposition. the unreal names and forms we have created, and we forget about the substratum, the reality that underlies them. That's the end of the quote. So, of course, most of the people in this room are or have been Course students. And so we understand what is being explained here by Sri Annamalai Swami. He is talking about the experience of false beliefs being projected outward and seeming real. But one thing that is particularly interesting about this quote is how the quote begins. So I'm not going to read the entire quote again. I'm going to go back to the beginning because it was so long ago. This was such a long quote. And I'm going to read the first few lines of the quote again. Are you ready? Mind and body are like the tongue and teeth in the mouth. They have to work in harmony with each other. The teeth do not fight with the tongue and bite it. Mind and body should combine in the same harmonious way. So what's interesting about this teaching from Sri Annamalai Swami, although he is very clearly teaching that the world is not real, it is a mirage, it is a mere projection, at the very same time, he's saying that the mind and body need to work together. You know, this reminds me of in A Course in Miracles when Jesus says that, although he teaches very clearly that the body is not real. In fact, if you are doing the Course workbook right now, you know the review lessons are every day, I am not a body, I am free, I am still as God created me. So Jesus very clearly teaches that the body is not real, yet at the same time in the Course, he says that denial of the body is a very unworthy form of denial. And Sri Annamalai Swami seems to be saying the same thing. So with that understood, why don't we go and look at my journal? I provided the link, so you can click on that, number 262. This is what I wrote after contemplating this quote. It is a gross error to misidentify with the body and then make the body behave as if there is no world. This attempt to force behavior without any shift in identification will only result in additional suffering. Practice shifting attention from the belief in the world as real to awareness of present being. Let the body be natural in harmony with attention. I think probably most of us, if not all of us, know how stupid we can become when we have an intellectual understanding. I hesitate on the word understanding because actually to me, intellectual and understanding no longer go together. So I found myself having trouble saying that. But for now, I'll go ahead and use those words. And we have an intellectual understanding that the world is not real, but we do not yet have that vision at all. We can get stupid. I mean, maybe before we studied the Course or a similar teaching about projection, for example, we'd have a cold and we'd just have a cold. But after we study the Course and we get this intellectual understanding that the world is not real and the body is not real and we have a cold, now we feel guilty for having a cold. Maybe we want to hide from others, that we have the cold. Maybe we don't take the medicine that would have been helpful with the symptoms that we would have taken before. You know, we get stupid. And this is why, some teachers, particularly what comes to mind now are Ken Wapnick and Gary Renard, some teachers say, don't be weird because we get that way. I'm going to use the word stupid. I don't know if I'm offending anyone or not, but I will assure you that that I have gone through that phase. So when I use the word stupid, I am including myself. Jesus would have called it insane. So, what we are being told now is that it is an error. In fact, in my journal, it says a gross error to
still actually be identified with the body, and yet trying to force some type of behavior based on an intellectual understanding that there is no world. And again, you know, feeling guilty for having a cold, you know, would be trying to force the behavior of health, to be honest. I'm reminded, Kathy Scott Perry just a couple days ago wrote on Facebook about how when her daughter was murdered, she was at the funeral, and there was a Unity minister who did the service. But then afterwards, you know, came up to Kathy and said something like, you know, you created this, or something like that. All those kinds of things fall for me into that same bucket, that same, you know, stupidity bucket of having an intellectual understanding that the world is not real, but not yet having a true understanding. It causes us to not be compassionate with others who seem to be suffering. It causes us to try and deny our own feelings, our own experiences, lie to ourselves about our reactions, just all kinds of things. And so what we are being told here by Sri Annamalai Swami is that mind and body are like the tongue and teeth and mouth. They have to work in harmony with each other. So what this means to me is that if my mind is still identified with the body as me, then it is foolish to deny that identification. And in fact, if I deny that identification, I'm only going to increase my suffering. It is much better instead to state within myself an honest statement of my identification. For example, if I have a cold and I am still identified with myself as a body, you know, I might say something like, I truly believe that I have a cold. This is what it seems like right now. I don't feel good. I do not have the energy I normally have. You know, I'm still fully identified with this, and this is how I feel. So as a result, I'm not going to lie to myself or others about how I feel. I am going to take the medication that in the past has made me feel better, or I am going to rest more, or I am going to have chicken soup or whatever. You know, I'm still going to be in harmony with those beliefs. However, because I want to go beyond this identification, I am also going to give my willingness to go beyond this identification. I am going to give my willingness for Holy Spirit to give me another way to see. I'm going to give my willingness to listen to present moment guidance. I give my willingness to go beyond the identification, but I do not deny the identification. I still act in harmony with my present beliefs, because if I do not act in harmony with my present beliefs, I only increase my suffering. Now, 262, as you guys know, this journal is actually my guidance, and specifically, this was my guidance on February 23rd, 2012, the day that this was written. So this was the guidance given to me on that day at that time. And so what was written for me was, practice shifting attention from the belief in the world as real to awareness of present being, right? So practice shifting attention. So based on, you could say, the stage of understanding that I was at on February 23rd, 2012, then I was told that whenever I noticed that there was some kind of an identification with the body, you know, maybe somebody says something and I feel insulted, right? Regina is insulted. That's an identification with this person body, right? So I feel insulted. Well, then my guidance, when I notice that I feel insulted, is to shift my attention from the belief in the world as real, or from belief in this story, attachment to this story, wanting it to be different, thinking about the story, thinking about the insult, thinking about the motives of the person who said what they said, right? Shift my attention from all of that to just being aware of present being. This was my guidance. Just shift my attention. And then let the body be natural in harmony with attention. Now, I will tell you how I experience this. If I believe that there's an insult fully, right? If I believe that someone insults me, then, you know, I might react in a number of ways depending on my personality. I may just be hurt and avoid that person, right? I may try and insult that person back, make them feel as bad as I felt, and therefore make myself feel better, right? So if I'm fully believing the story, I'm going to react from fully believing the story. Now, if I'm in that bucket of having an intellectual understanding that this isn't true, but not having a true understanding that this isn't true, what I might do is something else which might actually hurt more, is I might deny that I feel offended. Try to pretend like I do not feel offended. And that type of denial I find really backs up in some way and hurts. So that might be something I would do. The third option that is being given here is to notice, I'm feeling offended. Right this moment, I'm believing that I am a body, that I am a person. I'm believing this story. Okay, what I'm going to do is take a break from this belief, and I'm just going to focus on my present being. Now, what would happen for me when I would take that break from this belief and focus on my present being is that somehow intuitively I would get in touch with the isness that, well, it's beyond person, right? Beyond personality, beyond Regina, and it's not affected by anything, right? So I would get in touch with that being not affected. That being not affected would become my experience. It's in the language of the Course, I would shift from the wrong mind to the right mind. Once I shift to the right mind, the actions that come from that right mind are not wrong-minded actions. I'm not insulting someone, or I'm not avoiding someone. But they're also not repressed or denied behaviors. They're honest behaviors that come from a true shift, so that however I respond to that person or do not respond to that person, as the case may be, it's coming from honesty. It's coming from the shift, right? So my body is being natural in harmony with my attention because I took the time to shift my attention, or I took the time to shift from the wrong mind to the right mind. So although I may not behave in the way the personality would have behaved without the shift, whether that was to insult the person back or try to avoid the person, although I may not behave in that way, my behavior is also not faked like it would have been if I was repressing the belief, right? It's a true and honest reaction coming from the fact that I took the time to shift to the right mind first by being aware of present being. So what is being recommended here is basically not to lie to ourselves, to be honest about our beliefs, but don't stop there. Be honest about our beliefs, and then either A, give our willingness to see differently, or if we have a practice and are able to exercise that practice and make an honest shift, then exercise that practice and make an honest shift on the spot. That's what's being recommended. So again, number 262 from the journal. It is a gross error to misidentify with the body and then make the body behave as if there is no world. Again, if I'm identified with the body, then I do believe there is a world. So there's a repression or denial going on. I'm faking it in a way that is not at all helpful. As Jesus said, it's a very unworthy form of denial, right? It is a gross error to misidentify with the body and then make the body behave as if there is no world. This attempt to force behavior without any shift in identification will only result in additional suffering. Practice shifting attention from the belief in the world as real to awareness of present being. And as I mentioned, when I shift my attention from the story, from what appears to be happening in front of me or to me, right, to the awareness of present being, then what also happens is I shift into knowing I am unaffected, right? And then, from that state, let the body be natural in harmony with attention. And again, the natural outcome, the behavior will be different, not because the behavior was changed, but because the mind was changed, right? The attention was changed, the shift occurred. And then as a result, what follows is also different. All right, so that is number 262. Now, if you are in the journal with me, what you can do is scroll down underneath the comment area, and on the left you will see a 263. You can click on that 263 to go to the next entry in the journal. For those of you who are new to the room who would like to join us in the journal, I am posting a link to number 263 for you. And I'm going to take a moment to take a drink. All right, and now I'm going to read number 263 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, this quote is coming from Sri Annamalai Swami, and this is the quote. It's shorter this time, so you don't have to pay attention as long as you did last time. All right, here we go. We think we live in a real, materially substantial world, and that our minds and bodies are real entities that move around in it. When the self is seen and known, all these false ideas fade away, and one is left with the knowledge. Self alone exists. And of course, self is capitalized in this quote. A Course in Miracles might call it God instead of self, right? We think we live in a real, materially substantial world, and that our minds and bodies are real entities that move around in it. When the self is seen and known, all these false ideas fade away, and one is left with the knowledge, self alone exists. All right, so going to the journal now, number 263. The world we live in is an illusion. And these body, mind, personalities that we think of as us are not who we are. Yet, intellectual agreement with these ideas has little value when the unreal seems to be reality in our experience. This is not the time to fake it. This is the time to practice being aware of the core of life, present being. So we can see that the guidance is the same, right? The guidance is the same about not denying your true feelings, your true emotions, your true thoughts. And when I say true here, I don't mean capital T true. I mean what you're identified with, what you would think are your true thoughts, right? So, you know, one of the things that happened here in Colorado, I think probably almost everyone is aware, they call it the Batman shooting. A man walked into a Batman premiere the other night and shot 70-some people, 12 of which died, and the others are taken to the hospital, many in critical condition, last I heard. And if you talk to people here in Colorado, probably it's true all over, but certainly if you talk to people here in Colorado, there are people here who have emotions about that. So what this is saying is don't deny those emotions. If you believe that you are afraid, then say that you feel afraid, that you believe you are afraid. And when I say say, I mean say to yourself or say to Holy Spirit. I'm talking about not lying to yourself here, right? Be in confession with yourself. I feel afraid. I feel angry. I feel sad. I'm in confusion. Some people may even say my faith is questioned here. I'm taught all there is God, but I look at this story, and I just cannot see. I'm taught there's only one will. There is no will that is separate from God, but I look at this story and I just cannot see. What this is saying is admit what seems true for you. But there's a difference between admitting what seems true for you and saying and that's all there is to it. So, for example, it would be an error, and by an error I mean it would not necessarily be helpful towards healing. If I say, he is just evil, there's evil in the world, some people are pure evil, and that's all there is to it, and I close the subject. Right? If I say that, then I'm not providing the opening for Holy Spirit to help me transcend my current scene. But at the same time, if I feel that he is evil, and I feel that there is evil in the world, there's always been evil in the world, and yet I'm afraid to admit that because somehow I'm now a bad core student for feeling that way, that also doesn't open the door for healing. What opens the door for healing is the middle way. What opens the door for healing is, first of all, admitting what I feel and believe right now. So if I feel that he is evil, that there is evil in the world, there has always been evil in the world, right? Then I present that to myself. But I follow that up with the opening for healing. I follow that up with, but I am willing to see this differently. I follow that up with, I want to know the truth, right? I follow that up with, I want to truly see differently. Or above all else, I want to see. Or, as my personal guidance was on February 24th, 2012, I follow that up with switching now to awareness of being, awareness of isness. Some people call it awareness of awareness. And there's something miraculous about shifting into that awareness of awareness, as some people would call it. Because when you shift into that awareness, you become aware of that which is unaffected. And you've now gone before the mind. You've gone beyond the mind. You've transcended the mind. This cannot be explained by mind. But there is something in you that now knows everything's okay. Nothing true was affected, right? Just like the course begins, right? Nothing real is affected. Only this isn't some intellectual denial trick. This is coming from a shift that you took the time to take by practicing being aware of your own core of life, or present being, or isness, or non-affectedness. And from that state, although you can never explain it to someone who doesn't understand it yet themselves, from that state, there's a knowing in you that everything is okay, or all is well, is the way it sometimes is expressed. I was telling a group of people today, we gathered today at a friend's house, and we were talking about all of this today here in Colorado. And I was telling them that, when I first started feeling this all is well feeling, sometimes people would challenge me and they might say, how can you say all is well? Or how can you say all there is love when, you know, something like this Aurora incident happens? And, well, when somebody asked me that question a month or two ago, what I first tried to do was a mistake. What I first tried to do was to shift into my thinking mind. There was the mistake right there. Shift into my thinking mind and try and explain how that could be okay. But as soon as I did that, I felt this pressure or tension or confusion in my mind that wasn't there a moment ago. And I knew I had just shifted from my natural right mind to my wrong mind by even trying to answer the question. So what I did is I just shifted right back. And I just answered, I don't know, because that was my answer in the moment. I answered, I don't know, and I let it go. I didn't try to explain how all could be well and things like that could still happen in the world. But the next morning when I woke up with a realization. And the way that I put that realization into words is this. You know, let's imagine somebody who had never had watermelon came up to me and asked me, what does watermelon taste like? And I hand them a hamburger. And I ask them to take a bite out of the hamburger, and then I try and use that hamburger to explain what watermelon tastes like. I can't do it. There's just no way I can explain what watermelon tastes like using a hamburger. Well, that's like trying to use the stories of the world to understand this natural awareness that all is well. It's like trying to explain to somebody what a watermelon tastes like using a hamburger. You can't do it. You can't look at stories like what happened in Aurora and use the story to explain that all is well. This is why the Bible calls it the peace that passeth understanding. It cannot be understood. This is why A Course in Miracles says you cannot reconcile truth and illusion. It can't be reconciled. But as you continue the practice of shifting your attention or your awareness to that which is not affected, that awareness becomes your awareness. I don't know how else to say it. And so you walk around, you carry around this realization that everything is all right, all is well, nothing is affected. And one way that you know this is true is because you don't only have this awareness when there's a news story about a man, you know, shooting a bunch of people in a theater. You have this awareness when things, quote, go wrong in your life. Things that you know would have been extremely upsetting to you before, and they just aren't. You still move through the motions. You know, if you had been in the theater, you would have, you know, gone under the chair, or you would have called 911, or you would have done whatever there was to do in the moment. If you had been a cop, you would have came in, you would have arrested, right? You still go through the motions, but the upset isn't present. The peace is there. The this is okay as it is there. The all is well, the nothing is affected is there. So what these two quotes, again, 262 and 263, what they are saying is do not fake that. Do not pretend like you think all is well when actually you're still upset. Don't deny your upset. Be honest about how you feel. But then open up to seeing differently. And specifically, the guidance for me on February 23rd and February 24th, take a breath and shift that attention, shift that awareness back on that which is present but not affected. You know, see for yourself. Taste for yourself. Know for yourself everything is okay. Right? And then somehow that just becomes a leading knowing in your life. So the world we live in is an illusion. And these body-mind personalities that we think of as us are not who we are. Yet intellectual agreement with these ideas has little value when the unreal seems to be reality in our experience. This is not the time to fake it. This is the time to practice being aware of the core of life, present being. Be as aware as you can be of that which is not affected, and that which is not affected rises into your awareness. And then you're not faking it, right? All right, if you are in number 263 and you scroll down below the comment area on the left, you will see a 264. You can click on that. And I am going to copy that and paste that link into the room. Yeah, Bill Free has written, God did not create this, therefore it cannot be real. The sky is never affected by the clouds. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to read first number 264 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, the person being quoted now is Sri Annamalai Swami. And I really don't know who that is, by the way, nor do I care, because it's gotten to where I hear only one voice. The body that it comes from is irrelevant. You know, it's one voice. It's one true voice that seems to come out of many bodies, right? So I give the credit to the name and the book, but the truth is it's our one voice that is speaking to us now. So I don't really feel like I need to go find out who, quote, this guy is or was. Number 264. There are dream consequences for the bad acts committed in the dream. And while you still take the dream to be reality, you will suffer the consequences of your bad behavior. Do no evil and have no hate. Have equanimity towards everything. So again, he seems to be addressing the, what I called the stupid bucket earlier. He seems to be addressing the ego's interpretation of the world is not real, and the ego's interpretation of this is not about behavior, right? And the ego's interpretation is, I can just stay in my wrong mind and act the way my wrong mind acts. That's the ego's interpretation. The ego's interpretation of if I need do nothing is I can just stay in my wrong mind and act the way my wrong mind acts. And what he's saying is if you do that, you'll suffer. You know, when we say that everything is perfect, right? When we say that this is not about changing behavior, right? When we say I need do nothing, at the same time, we aren't saying, just stay in your ego. And the reason we're not saying, just stay in your ego, it's not because you're guilty for staying in your ego. You're never guilty for anything that you do. It's more along the lines of, God's will for me is perfect happiness. And perfect happiness does not come from staying in your ego. So that is why there are also teachings, and in fact, there's several teachings, all of which, you know, can be good teachings, because, you know, it seems like different teachings are helpful for different people. But that's why there are teachings that teach you how to let go of being addicted to being in your ego. That's why there are teachings that teach you how to shift from your wrong mind to your right mind, using the language of the Course. And so, if my mind is full of hatred right now for a personality standing in front of me, it's not the time to listen to the ego's interpretation of I need do nothing and everything is perfect and then grab a baseball bat and start hitting the hell out of that person. That's not the point. In fact, if I'm really full of hate or really full of fear, you know, and it may take great restraint to just walk away. To say nothing and walk away, and I go ahead and I practice that great restraint. And then when I get to a place where I can turn my attention inward and start crying if that's how I feel and confessing my hatred and asking for guidance, then I do that. Basically, what he is saying is, the teaching is, do whatever you need to do to not stay in your ego. Because you're not the ego. When you say, I hate this person and that's just the way it is, you're mistaken. And what you want to do is you want to see the truth about who you are and what you are and what you feel. And sometimes, because of what the Course calls the strong attraction to guilt, it may take great restraint to not follow through with your ego's urgings. But go ahead and take that great restraint and do not follow through with your ego's urgings and go find the time away, the space away, to turn your attention inward and ask for guidance. All right, so after reading his quote and contemplating his quote, I wrote number 264 in my journal, and this is what it says. While the mind-body-world illusion persists, there will be temptations. And a temptation is a temptation to believe your ego, believe those are your true thoughts, and to act from those thoughts, right? That's a temptation. While the mind-body-world illusion persists, there will be temptations. Every temptation comes from the belief that mind-body-world are reality. To believe illusion as if it is reality is the cause of suffering, right? To believe illusion as if it is reality is the cause of suffering. Do not deny the pull of temptation when it is present, but do regain some sense of sanity. Check with your heart. Practice self-inquiry. Move to awareness of core present being. True spiritual practice removes every temptation and sets you free from the mind-made illusion of suffering. So one of the statements that we hear that is true is, you are perfect now. Your right mind is completely whole now. Therefore, it's always available. And you can always take the time to listen to it, to shift into it. The truth is, you don't ever have to act from your ego, no matter how strong the, quote, attraction to guilt is. And this particular journal entry isn't saying that there's one practice. It's only listing a few of the many practices that might be helpful when the attraction to guilt, the pull to act with ego, is very strong. You know, one suggestion is check with your heart. You know, for me, that would be like the practice of surrender. What am I to do now? You know, there was a time when someone appeared to be blatantly attacking me. In words, not physical attack, but blatantly attacking me. And it was on a Yahoo group. And the pull, the attraction to guilt, the temptation at the time was to strongly defend myself with another post. And I was upset I was angry. I felt unfairly treated. And I really wanted to set this person straight. But I took the time to check within. And what I heard was, step away from the keyboard. Because the keyboard was going to be my weapon, right? Step away from the keyboard. And so I got up and I went over to a love seat that I had near my computer at the time. And I sat in my love seat and I asked again for guidance. You know, what am I to do now? And my guidance was to look at the thoughts in my mind, to notice the thoughts in my mind, you know, without believing them. But start paying attention to these ideas like, I'm unfairly treated, right? Start looking and just sit and watch. And I was guided to do nothing else but sit and watch from a place of observation rather than a place of believing. And I don't know how long I sat there. I would estimate 15 or 20 minutes. I was pretty upset, just watching and watching and watching all of these thoughts in my mind, but again, from a place of observation, not from a place of believing. And then what happened was honestly a miracle. Because what happened next was the seeing came into my mind that all of these thoughts that I was thinking needed to be let go of. And that this person, by providing this opportunity for me, was actually helping me let go of ego. Was helping me to see these ideas like I'm unfairly treated. And to choose not to believe them. And this was a shift. This was not an intellectual thought. This was a shift. And when this shift came, all of my negative emotions, all of my anger, all of my feeling of being a victim disappeared immediately. And I became grateful. In fact, if the person who had written the original post walked through the door right then, I would have been hugging him and kissing his face and telling him thank you. This was an honest shift. It came from the practice of check with your heart, or what I call asking before acting. Asking within, right? But that's not the only way to make room for a shift. Self-inquiry is another perfect way to make room for a shift. Who is the I that feels unfairly treated, right? By asking those types of questions, you can start to see that's the false self, or what some people might call the imposter self. That's not me. Or moving attention to that knowingness that can't be pointed to, right? That beingness, that isness, that all is wellness, that unaffectedness. You know, if that skill is there, moving attention to that. There was a time in my life when the practice would have been to sit down and journal with Holy Spirit. Holy Spirit, how am I to see this? And an answer would have come. And then I would have followed that guidance. There are a number of ways to allow a shift. But we have to allow the shift. We have to make room for the shift. We start by being honest about how we feel, and then we move into the practice, the guidance that is current from us, that moves us away from that wrong mind into our right mind, which is whole and perfect and available now. And when we're in that right mind, we see so differently. There is no longer a grievance. There is no longer anger or hatred. There is no longer the feeling of being a victim or unfairly treated, because those ideas do not exist there. So the practice is not to deny what we think is true. The practice is to shift away from the mind that thinks it's true into the mind or the seeing or the vision that knows what's true and what's false. So while the mind-body-world illusion persists, there will be temptations. Every temptation comes from the belief that mind, body, world are reality. To believe illusion as if it is reality is the cause of suffering. Do not deny the pull of temptation when it is present, but do regain some sense of sanity. Don't just act from there either. Check with your heart. Practice self-inquiry. Move to awareness of core present being. Whatever your current spiritual practice is, do that instead. True spiritual practice removes every temptation because it shifts you from the wrong mind to the right mind where the temptation does not exist, where that type of seeing does not exist. True spiritual practice removes every temptation and sets you free from the mind-made illusion of suffering. And that is it for me tonight. So happy evening, everyone. I'll be back tomorrow, and I'll start with a Muru Ganar song. I don't know if I'll do one in English or one in Tamil. We'll find out tomorrow. All right? Happy evening. Bye-bye.